Monday, February 10th. First reading from Genesis chapter 1, verses 1 through 19. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was a formless wasteland, and darkness covered the abyss, while a mighty wind swept over the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. God saw how good the light was. God then separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. Thus evening came, and morning followed, the first day. Then God said, "Let there be a dome in the middle of the waters to separate one body of water from the other." And so it happened. God made the dome, and it separated the water above the dome from the water below it. God called the dome the sky. Evening came, and morning followed, the second day. Then God said, "Let the water under the sky be gathered into a single basin, so that the dry land may appear." And so it happened. The water under the sky was gathered into its basin, and the dry land appeared. God called the dry land the earth, and the basin of water he called the sea. God saw how good it was. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth vegetation, every kind of plant that bears seed, and every kind of fruit tree on earth that bears fruit with its seed in it." And so it happened. The earth brought forth every kind of plant that bears seed, and every kind of fruit tree on earth that bears fruit with its seed in it. God saw how good it was. Evening came and morning followed, the third day. Then God said, "Let there be lights in the dome of the sky to separate day from night. Let them mark the fixed times, the days and the years, and serve as luminaries in the dome of the sky to shed light upon the earth." And so it happened. God made the two great lights, the greater one to govern the day, and the lesser one to govern the night, and he made the stars. God set them in the dome of the sky to shed light upon the earth, to govern the day and the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. God saw how good it was. Evening came and morning followed, the fourth day. Haydock Commentary. As St. Matthew begins his Gospel with the same title as this work, the Book of the Generation or Genesis, so St. John adopts the first words of Moses, "in the beginning." But he considers a much higher order of things, even the consubstantial Son of God, the same with God from all eternity, forming the universe in the beginning of time, in conjunction with the other two divine persons, by the word of his power, for all things were made by him, the undivided deity. The first cause of all things must be God, who, in a moment, spoke, and heaven and earth were made, heaven with all the angels, and the whole mass of the elements in a state of confusion and blended together, out of which the beautiful order which was so admirable came. Thus God was pleased to manifest his free choice in opposition to those pagans who attributed all to blind chance or fate. Heaven is here placed first, and is not declared empty and dark like the earth, that we may learn to raise our minds and hearts above this land of trial to that our true country, where we may enjoy God forever. The Spirit of God gives life, vigor, and motion to things, and prepares the waters for the sacred office of baptism, in which, by the institution of Jesus Christ, we must be born again, and, like spiritual fishes, swim amid the tempestuous billows of this world. The sun was made on the fourth day and placed in the firmament to distinguish the seasons, etc. But the particles of fire were created on the first day, and by their, or the earth's motion, served to discriminate day from the preceding night, or darkness, which was upon the face of the deep. Perhaps this body of light might resemble the bright cloud which accompanied the Israelites in Exodus. Or the three first days might have a kind of imperfect sun, or be like one of our cloudy days. Nothing can be defined with certainty respecting the nature of this primeval light. God saw that it was good, that is, beautiful and fitting. While our hemisphere enjoys the day, the other half of the world is involved in darkness. By dividing the light and the darkness, St. Augustine supposes the fall and punishment of the apostate angels to be insinuated. By the name firmament or dome is here understood the whole space between the earth and the highest stars, the lower part of which divides the waters that are upon the earth from those that are above in the clouds. The heavens are often represented as a tent spread out. See Psalm 103. Regarding every kind of fruit tree on earth that bears fruit with its seed in it, at the creation, trees were covered with fruit in the southern parts, while in the more northern regions they would not even have leaves. Hence the question concerning the season of the year when the world began must be understood only with reference to that climate in which Adam dwelt. One tradition fixes it upon the 25th of March, on which day Christ was also conceived and was nailed to the cross. A great part of respectable authors declare for the vernal equinox, when the year is in all its youth and beauty. By specifying the use and creation of the heavenly bodies to mark the seasons and years, Moses shows the folly of the Gentiles who adored them as gods, and the impiety of those who pretend that human affairs are under the fatal influence of the planets. See Book 4 of Augustine's Confessions. The Hebrew term here rendered seasons may signify either months or the times for assembling to worship God. Plato calls the sun and planets the organs of time, of which, independently of their stated revolutions, man could have formed no conception. The two great lights. God created on the first day light, which being moved from east to west by its rising and setting, made morning and evening. But on the fourth day he ordered and distributed this light, and made the sun, moon, and stars. The moon, though much less than the stars, is here called a great light, from its giving a far greater light to the earth than any of the stars. These are to govern and adorn the day and the night, for nothing appears so glorious as the sun and moon. Whether the stars be the suns of other worlds, and whether the moon, etc., be inhabited, philosophers dispute, without being able to come to any certain conclusion. For as we read in Ecclesiastes 3, God has delivered the world to their consideration for dispute, so that man cannot find out the work which God hath made from the beginning to the end. If we must frequently confess our ignorance concerning the things which surround us, how shall we pretend to dive into the designs of God, or subject the mysteries of faith to our feeble reason? If we think the scriptures really contradict the systems of philosophers, ought we to pay greater deference to the latter than to the unerring word of God? But we must remember that the sacred writings were given to instruct us in the way to heaven, and not to unfold to us the systems of natural history. And hence God generally addresses us in a manner best suited to our conceptions, and speaks of nature as it appears to the generality of mankind. At the same time, we may confidently assert that the scriptures never assert what is false. If we judge with the vulgar that the sun, moon, and stars are no larger than they appear to our naked eye, we shall still have sufficient reason to admire the works of God. But if we are enabled to discover that the sun's diameter, for example, is 763,000 miles, and its distance from our earth is about 95 million miles, and the fixed stars, as they are called, although they are all in motion, much more remote, what astonishment must fill our breast? Our understanding is bewildered in the unfathomable abyss, in the unbounded expanse, even of the visible creation. Sirius, the nearest to us of all the fixed stars, is supposed to be 400,000 times the distance from the sun that our earth is, or 38 millions of miles. Light, passing at the rate of 12 million miles every minute, would be nearly 3,000 years in coming to us from the remotest star in our stratum, beyond which are others immensely distant, which it would require about 40,000 years to reach even with the same velocity. Who shall not then admire thy works and fear thee, O King of ages? We are lost in wonder when we attempt to comprehend either the vastness or minuteness of creation. Shall anyone then pretend to wisdom and still call in question the mysteries of faith, transubstantiation, etc., when the most learned confess they cannot fully comprehend the nature even of a grain of sand?